Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams. Dr. Williams is the author of the acclaimed book, Shattered by the Darkness, Putting the Pieces Back Together After Child Abuse. Dr. Williams is on the senior leadership team at Baylor College of Medicine in Houston, Texas. And Dr. Williams travels the United States speaking and training professionals, parents, and victims about the importance of dealing with abuse and personal trauma head on and not being afraid to break the silence of your own personal pain. Feel free to call in to tonight's show at 888-627-6008 and speak with Dr. Williams and his guests live on air. And now, your host, Dr. Williams.
Well, good evening and welcome to Breaking the Silence. Sorry we are running late tonight. There was some technical difficulty or something going on at the radio station, unbeknownst to us. We were, Lisa and I was trying to figure out what's going on, our guest tonight. And but anyway, we're finally here and we're better than ever. We are in the most beautiful city in the world right here, Houston, Texas. And our guest is all the way out. And as I was thinking about this in Massachusetts, just as the Houston Astros are taking on the Boston Red Sox for that chance against the World Series, we not only have a guest tonight, we have competition tonight right here, Texas against Massachusetts. But no, it's going to be fine. But welcome to the program tonight. And we're still going to go about 50 minutes, so we won't lose much of our airtime this evening. So we're going to go a little long if we can keep our guest awake that long, because she's way beyond bedtime, I think, being out in Massachusetts and the time of being completely different. But 888-627-6008. Been an awesome day today in Texas and in Houston. I've been at New Beginnings Christian Tabernacle here in town and doing a wonderful conference or domestic violence awareness day seminar, and it was just wonderful that the church set the whole service to the side and focused on domestic violence awareness. And it was just a great conference and a great session, and I appreciate them inviting me, and they treated me so special. So thank you to the New Beginnings Christian Tabernacle and the entire staff. They were our guests last week on the program, and it was just a great time. So, but I'm going to get right into it since we kind of jumped in a little bit late. Day late, dollar short, that's the story of my life. But when you have OCD and PTSD, I'm ready to kill something. I just don't know why. So I need it. Let me take another drink of a diet soda here.
Take a sip.
Take a deep breath, as I've been taught to do. Tonight's guest tonight. And I've just finished your book. I read it earlier in the week, and I read it again this afternoon when I got home from the church conference. Lisa Zarcone is the author of her memoir, The Unspoken Truth. And she is literally a champion for child and mental health advocate and a blogger on her own website at www.lisazarcone.net. As the Massachusetts National Ambassador and Regional Director for the New England area of the NAASCA, which means the National Association of Adult Survivors of Child Abuse. So we've had several of those folks on our show the last year or so, and she uses her title and her personal story as a platform to speak about the importance of child abuse and mental health. She conducts, I think, matter of fact, I've been trying to get her on the program. Lisa, it's been probably 6 months. Seems like we've tried and we never could connect and get a right date because you're always so busy. But she is a great at demand for sharing her wisdom with workshops and presentations and interviews and TV appearances, DJ spotlights and newspaper articles and interviews. And also, she has her own radio show, so she understands what radio is all about. And that's on the Blog Talk Radio and Stop Child Abuse Now as a panel host. And just this, what was it, a few months ago, she received the Heroine Award for Massachusetts Commission on the Status of Women. And that was recognition for the awesome work that she does in her community. So all the way from the friendly Massachusetts state, we'll call it all friendly and just have fun tonight. Lisa Zarcone, welcome to the program, Lisa, and thank you for your patience with us tonight. Hello, can you hear me all right?
I can hear you. Can you hear me okay?
You look fine and you sound fine. Okay. So we're going to just jump right in. Normally, I start off with a little bit of fluff, yep. But there's not going to be any fluff tonight. I really want to jump right into your story. And I have read the book and I finished it twice.
That's amazing. That's amazing. You read it twice. Thank you.
I always tell all the guests, hey, I read it early in the week. I usually like to read it within 48 hours of the interview so I can just be fresh because I don't have questions in front of me. I just like to go from the heart. So I reread it this afternoon, a quick read. And the unspoken truth is deep, a good read. And I think a good word for it is raw. You didn't candy coat it. And I want to know right up front, Lisa, why did you call it The Unspoken Truth? What was it and what caused you to lean in and said, this is the time to write it and release it and tell it?
Yes, the unspoken truth, my story. You know, I named it The Unspoken Truth because, like, think about it. You know, we lived in silence. Our abuse has kept us silent for so many years. And when I decided to write my story, I said, you know what? It's got to be called The Unspoken Truth because that's the life I lived. Everything was silent. I lived in silence. I held my pain in silence. And I knew once I was breaking the silence that's the name that it would have to be called. And I also, you know, when I say my book is raw, obviously you read it, you know, my book is a very raw read. I wanted to write my book differently. So I wrote through the child's perspective, not an adult looking back. You know, reading the story, you're right in the moment with that child and feeling that pain. And I did it that way purposely. I wanted people to truly understand what the child felt and how that child feels when they're going through this awfulness and feeling so alone. So, you know, the big words for me when I think back to the pain is silence, alone, lost, all those words. And all that drew me to the unspoken truth, because I never told my story. I lived it in silence. I walked around in silence and I held it so tight. And that silence does tremendous damage from childhood on up to adulthood. And until you really break it down and look at it, the raw truth, you cannot move forward. So what pushed me to write the story, finally put it out there, I hit a point in my life where, you know, my past caught up with me. I couldn't hold it anymore. I couldn't, you know, suppress it anymore and keep it silent. So there it is. I had to put it out there. You know, over the years, I did a few different stints in therapy to work through different issues. But when I hit this point in my life, I knew it was time. And I felt for a very long time, I wanted to write my story and share it, but I didn't know how I was going to do that because I couldn't speak the words. I couldn't say them out loud. I couldn't say what happened to me because it was so traumatic. But once I finally opened up and started slowly speaking about it and working through it, and I started writing about it, that's when I knew it was time to put my book out there and to put my story out there. And it wasn't for book sales. It wasn't for, you know, the glamour and the glory of, oh, I'm an author, you know, being proud of being an author of your own story, but it was for purpose. It was to bring awareness to people and to also give a voice to the voiceless. I say that a lot. I'm a voice for the voiceless because I've made that step. And it was a very difficult, heart-wrenching step to take and painstaking. The healing process is messy and it's painstaking. But by showing people that I did it, I hope it encourages other people to step forward and take that step on the healing journey, because as hard as it was, and as hard as, you know, sometimes it still is when you get those pings from the past, it was so worth it because I now feel free. I'm free now. I don't have to hold it inside anymore. And hopefully it's helping other people.
Well, I tell you, in the first response to the first question, I have follow-up questions. It's going to take the whole hour, but I'm going to try to only pick a few because I have so many different directions I want to go. You mentioned your past has caught up with you. How did that present itself to you? How long, first of all, how long has the book been out? When did you write it? And how long did it take you? And then I really want to drill into that, the past caught up with you. Why did you go, now's the time? I got to break the silence.
Yes. So first of all, I always think about timing. So you and I were supposed to do this show back in July. And of course, my scheduling and family situations, I had to cancel. But timing. So this week, it's 5 years that my book has been out there in the world traveling. So talk about timing. 5 years later, my story is still traveling around. It's traveling the world. It's been everywhere. I'm really proud of that. And it really makes me happy to know that my story 5 years later is still moving. Books are selling, you know, it's not about money. It's about the story. It's about getting it out there. So it really is humbling and just fulfilling to know that all my hard work of putting this together is still traveling around 5 years later. So that's huge, you know?
Yeah, because the Amazon, you know, when you watch Amazon, I don't know, I'm sure you do, because I've heard even the greatest authors hit refresh Amazon about every hour to see where they're at on the stats. And, you know, it's amazing, because one day you can go up to the top 10. Yep. The next day you're at 1,400,000. You go, what happened? And then the next day you're 30. And then, you know, within an hour you could be at 35,000. So it just plays and they don't want you to figure it out.
I stopped looking at that because I just couldn't take it. I'm like, what is happening here? It's going up, it's going down, it's going sideways, you know, it's going everywhere. But, you know, at the grand scheme of all of it, it's going somewhere. So that's really
the moving.
It's moving. And that was the goal for me, is to, like I say, I have my story out there. I use it, you know, in all my workshops and presentations, you know, and it's just powerful and profound to so liberating, empowering to stand in front of people and share my story and read from my own book. It's amazing that I have come to this part of my life, and how I got here was a very long, difficult journey. But it really feels like I'm doing what I was always meant to do. You know, I went through this awfulness, but here it is. I'm taking it all, this pain, and I put a really good purpose to it, taking that negativity, changing it to a positive, and giving back. And that is priceless. You can't put a price tag on that, because it's I'm doing what I'm supposed to do. And that feels really, really good.
You know, I say that line all the time about the negativity into positivity, and that for the first time in my life, and I want your feedback on this, how it affects you. For the first time in my life, I feel like I have finally found what I was created for, and it's for this purpose. Even though we had to walk through hell to get there.
Yes.
It's hard to say I thank God for my experiences, because they were terrible. But boy, I'm glad that I'm at the point now to where I can use them to help other people, because there's not a better feeling. How do you feel about that?
I agree with you 100%. I've always felt that way. It's like, I believe that I'm here for a reason. What happened to me was for a reason. As awful and traumatic, and I put the word disgusting and hideous on my story, because those are true words that stick to that story. But I've become beyond it. I've healed. I'm doing wonderful things because of it. So I feel blessed, as you say, you know, I feel blessed that I'm able to do what I'm able to do. And I also feel very blessed that I was able to make it to this point, because so many people did not make it to this point. And as a young girl, I contemplated suicide. It's in my book. I was 13. I was very close to doing it. And I thank God that I didn't, that something told me not to, and I didn't. And probably, I want to say, for the reasons why I'm here right now and what I'm doing, you know, I was meant to do something special. I feel it's special because it's helping other people. And that's a beautiful gift.
It is. And we have a few minutes before our first break, but I want to just kind of, because I want to go into your story, but I want to make sure I have that without having to interrupt you. So we'll do that right after the first break. But how hard is it for you to have relationships now and be able to trust and lean into people after what you have gone through, and we'll find out what you've gone through here on the other side of the break. But how hard is it for you to trust now?
You know, I always put myself out there wholeheartedly. I try to give people the benefit of the doubt. Am I always a little leery or wary of things? Of course, you know, trauma and abuse does that to you, you know, PTSD. Yeah. And, you know, all of that sticks with you forever. You know, you can work, I say work with it, not against it. And you have to learn how to do that. But yes, trusting is not always the easiest, but I always try to put myself out there in a good light. And I'm always hopeful that people will return that good light. And, you know, you can always kind of tell sometimes when people are just not quite on the up and up. And that's kind of when I put my little caution lights on and say, okay, I'm not going to shut people down. But at the same time, I'm not going to go full speed ahead. I'll take a little step back and ride it out. So mm-hmm. I like to give people the opportunity, I guess, to say, to show their true colors, but, you know, their true, you know, who they are and what they're looking for. And, you know, you find many people are very caring and giving, but you also find the takers. And that's just the reality of life. I mean, regardless of whether you've been through hardships or not, there's always people out there that are looking to take more than to give. So you have to find that balance, and you have to learn how to trust your instincts, your inner gut. And I've really learned how to do that. And I know, again, my past has taught me that, is to really learn how to go with your gut. And when something, that little red flag goes up, pay attention.
When this came out 5 years ago, had you been talking about it prior to that, or was this the release to tell everybody in your inner circle and outer circle, people of friendships, that here it is, here's the book? Is that how it came out?
I know I shouldn't be laughing. I laugh sometimes, but really it's not funny. But, you know, my inner circle knew. My next layer of circle didn't know all. and other people on the outside of that didn't know at all. So it was like a bomb. I could say that. Sharing all of this with my husband for the first time was a huge bomb. And we can get into that when I talk about my story, is like how I am telling
him. Important.
Very important, because it didn't happen at the beginning of our relationship. It happened 10 years into our relationship.
And it affected the relationship, didn't it?
Oh, absolutely. Three children in, married 10 years, and I dropped this bomb. You know, like, my husband knew certain things, but he didn't know everything. And the sexual abuse is very... was the really the biggest part I couldn't talk about at all, because it was so damaging and it was so horrific. I get the horrific, the house of horrors. That's what I called my home, because that connects to all of that abuse and that awfulness. But yes, it's when I think back, it's still, you know, it's daunting to think that this is the reality of what happened to me. But, you know, again, grateful for all I'm doing now and where I am and how I've made it forward. So, but yeah, call it the big bomb. And, you know, I have family members that stopped talking to me after my story came out.
Yeah.
Because, you know, and it's them owning their part. And, you know, I understand. At first I was very hurt by that, but I get it. I get it, because not everybody is on the same, I don't want to say level, but the same thought process is where I am now at this time. But when my book first came out and family members attacked me and were very mean to me, it really broke my heart. But I understand that, you know, they're not owning that part that they were involved in. So if you're not going to own it, you're not going to deal with it. So I'm going to leave that right there.
In a quick nutshell before we take our break, what kind of healing did this do for you to write the book and not even publish it, just to write it? What kind of process, therapeutic, what did that do for you and to you as you was going through that and putting those words on the page?
Wow, that, you know, that breaking it into pieces. And I started from the beginning, and I tell people that all the time, when you start your healing journey, go right from the beginning, step by step. I did a lot of this in therapy. I wrote and I would bring it into my therapist, and him and I would go over it piece by piece. And, you know, one day he looked at me and he's like, "You realize you just wrote a whole book. Now you just got to tweak it." And I'm like, "Yeah, I did." But it was, you know, every stage I took step forward, you know, maybe a few steps back, because it was very difficult. Going through the process was hard, because a lot of the PTSD things came into place, the flashbacks, the nightmares were horrific. You know, but I kept trudging forward. And then when I felt like I couldn't do anymore, I had to stop, took a break from it, then went back at it. So I did it piece by piece. And that's the best way for anybody that the best advice I can give anyone who's trying to work through this, their stuff and their traumas and abuse, take it piece by piece, take it slow. And when you feel like it's too much, just stop for a little bit, take a breath, and then move forward again. And before you know it, you're moving and you're moving forward and you're taking things and you're putting them in where they belong and settling things and letting things go. And you'll start to feel lighter. You know, are you always going to have the pings? Yes, you are. I mean, that's just the reality of an abuse survivor. There's always going to be certain triggers. There's always going to be certain pings, but it doesn't have to control you anymore. Once you work through it, you regain control. And once you do that, life changes.
Isn't it amazing when you start putting the pieces together, like you go back to the very first memory, and then you start peeling back the layers and the pieces start just joining. And then you go, oh yeah, wait, the color of the drapes was, you know, 1970s green. And then you go through all that stuff and you go, wow. And then the smells come back. And sometimes it's not, but for me, it had to be complete. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to peel out every piece so I could heal.
Yes.
Because the silence was killing me.
And I understand. And I'm sorry for your pain and for what you went through. I just want to say that to you is that I know, you know, the pain of feeling that way. And I'm sorry you had to go through what you've gone through, but look how amazing you are and that you have to feel good about that. You have to feel like, wow, I've stepped
over that. I think the amazing thing is I get to meet a lot of amazing people and talk to them and join hands with them and say, hey, let's try to fix this area and what can we do to help there? And then to see people break their own silence. Yes. And that is like, hey, okay, if what I went through helps that one person, it's worth it. I tell you what, we're going to, I hope you're live on Facebook. If not, I hope you're seeing someplace else all the way around the world. 888-627-6008. We're going to take our first commercial break. Feel free to call in and any of Lisa's fan base, because I know she has a huge fan base on LinkedIn and all of that. People are always responding to her and they're just rooting you on. Feel free to call in, just give her words of encouragement. But on the other side of this break, Lisa, this will be about a minute and a half break. Okay. I really want to just say, hey, Lisa, tell us a story. You can't read the book, but just tell us a story that you want us to hear tonight. So maybe it would lean people in to hook them in to say, hey, I want to read this whole thing. And they can get on them and buy it and look at it through Kindle or Amazon or wherever. But we're just going to give you a moment to share however you want to share the entire next segment. And we'll be right back. After this first commercial break, 888-627-6008 with Lisa Zarko. Be right back. Finally coming very soon will be the release of my second book in the three-part trilogy, Overcoming the Darkness, The Roadmap to Hope. Now, this book will be an in-depth look at the many different facets and emotions that a person goes through when they're experiencing anxiety and trauma in their life, and they're simply searching for hope. And an exciting addition to this book will be a companion journal guide that will come along with it. Also, there's going to be something that I'm very excited about, the youth version of this book called When Dark Clouds Come, The Roadmap to Hope. And it's going to be an excellent tool and guide for teenagers dealing with stress in their lives. So stay tuned for the release date coming very, very soon for these exciting new resources. Now back to Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams on the BBS Radio Network.
Publishing that brought you the international bestsellers, A Child Called It, and the Chicken Soup for the Soul series comes the latest book by Dr. Gregory Williams, Shattered by the Darkness. This book describes the horrific abuse that Dr. Williams suffered at the hands of his father for over 12 years, and the damaging effect of keeping everything silent about that abuse for 30 years. If you're looking for that book that you can't put down, then pick up a copy of Shattered by the Darkness by Dr. Gregory Williams at all Barnes & Noble stores, Amazon, and Books A Million. Now, back to Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams.
All right, welcome back to the author of The Unspoken Truth, a memoir. And then there's a whole subtitle underneath that. We'll let her, Lisa Zarcone is with us tonight. It's been somebody I've been trying to get on the program for months. And finally, I'm so pleased that we finally hooked up and can do this. Lisa, share your story. First of all, I applaud you. Of course, you know you didn't cause any of that pain. It wasn't your fault, but I applaud you. And we say those things back and forth, just like it's old hat, but it took me a long time. And now I don't mind hearing it over and over. Hey, it wasn't your fault, but it wasn't. But thank you for sharing. But I want you now just to, the stage is yours. Just tell us a little bit about what happened.
What happened? You know, that's a loaded question.
Yeah.
What happened? How did it all fall apart? So my story, The Unspoken Truth, a memoir. And again, like I said, I named it The Unspoken Truth because I lived a silent hell, and I lived that silent hell for many, many years. So when I wrote this story, the only name that came to mind was The Unspoken Truth. And yes, the subtitle, If the Walls Could Speak, What a Tale They Would Tell. And I'll hold it up here and just show it for a moment, because this little girl, it's just such a spitting image of how I was as a child. And the house in the background it looks like a house of horrors. And that is how I described my home. And that's how I felt living there, because I was always in fear. There was always a terror going on. And it started at a very young age. So the beginning of my story, I start my book at the age of 6. So, but the backstory is that, you know, my mom suffered from mental illness that was not treated properly. She didn't get the proper help and support that she needed. So she really struggled tremendously. So this was back in the time of the 70s. So of course,
is this bipolar that you're talking about?
Yes, my mom was bipolar. She was manic, and she had schizoaffective behaviors when she was in her manic state. So my mom had a boatload of things happening at one time. And, you know, like I said, back in the 70s, it was the era of silence, and they didn't look very kindly upon somebody with mental illness. So my mom was shunned a lot and treated poorly because she was sick. Instead of, you know, helping her, people were, you know, treating her poorly. And, you know, she's, you know, young wife, you know, had two young children, trying to take care of them, trying to keep her home together. And she really struggled. So she was struggling before, you know, where I write in my story about my brother. So it was my brother and I. He was older than me. He was, you know, when he got sick, he got sick with leukemia. And at the age of 9, he passed away. And I was 6 years old when he passed away. So this is where I start my story in my book. The 6-year-old child who just lost her best friend, her guardian. He shielded me from so many things from my mom. When my mom was sick, he was very in tune to my mother, very in tune to when she wasn't well. He taught me how to look for those signs, to know when, you know, to back away, or to, you know, just be careful. And, you know, so with those things that he taught me, and he was my protector, then he got sick. And when I lost him, as a little girl, my whole world fell apart. I was crushed. I couldn't believe that my brother was gone. And my mom, what little bit of sanity my mom had left, she lost it the day that my brother died. And my dad always said that the day that John died, your mother died with him because she never was able to recoup and get back. You know, she struggled and tried her hardest. She did. You know, and I can look back now as an adult and see how difficult it was for her. But as a six-year-old child, you're just terrified. You're living in the unknown. You never know what's going to happen next. You never felt safe. So stepping forward after my brother's death, and another thing too, I never got to say goodbye to him. I wasn't allowed to go to the wake or the funeral. So I was sent to a friend's house for a couple of days, brought back home, and my brother's gone. And now they're packing my brother's room up. And I had so many questions. And I was six. I didn't know what to do. I didn't know what to say. And my family was very silent. They didn't even talk about it. Like when my brother was sick and going through things, they didn't talk about it. They didn't talk about it afterwards. It was just my brother died. He was gone. Done. And my father engrossed himself in his work. He ran away in a sense. He was in so much pain. He lost his wife. He lost his son. You know, I was there alone with my mom, and it was very difficult because as time moved forward, my mother became more ill, more, you know, having more manic episodes, and her pain turned to anger. Her anger turned to violence. I never knew what I was going to step into when I walked into my home. And that's why I called it the House of Horrors for that reason as well. I'd walk up the steps. I would take a deep breath as a little girl, and I would say to myself, I don't know what's going to happen, and I'm scared. But I had nobody to talk to. So I'd go in, and I never knew what I was going to face. And, you know, my mom was classic for riding that mental health roller coaster, the ups, the downs, the sideways, the mania. You know, I talk about in my story how she would be aggressive, and she would physically abuse me. She would verbally abuse me. And, you know, then she would be so high and manic, she would act so bizarre in the things she would do and say. So as a young child, it is very scary. Kids need stability. They need, you know, to feel safe. And that's all they want from their parents is to feel safe. I didn't feel any of that. I just lived on the edge every single day. And as time moved forward, my mother just became worse. And again, we're alone. We had no support. Family, you know, came and went, but you know, we were there alone. We were in that house. We were just moving forward day by day, and the abuse got uglier and darker. And, you know, there's times where my mother would throw things at me. So I'd be sitting at the kitchen table eating my food, and all of a sudden here comes a knife flying by my head, and here comes, you know, spoons, and I'm ducking and bobbing and weaving. And it became like I call it like a twisted sick game, because as a kid, I'm like, okay, am I going to get away with this? Am I going to get hit today? Is this the day the knife hits me? You know, but imagine that, what that does to the psyche of a child, you know? And, you know, my mom would get up at night and wander the house, and she would come into my bedroom, and I'd be sound asleep, and she'd be standing over my bed with the scissors, like aiming, like she's going to stab me. And I would be like, crying. I'm like, Mom, what are you doing? What are you doing? And she wouldn't even answer me. Her eyes were black, and like she wasn't even there. And then she turned around and walked out. That was scarier than anything, because you weren't even getting a reaction. You were getting nothing but that eerie silence. And I lived that for years, her and I home alone. And, you know, my dad stayed until I think I was about 12. And then he couldn't take it anymore, and he left, you know, and it devastated me that my dad left me there with her. And that in itself was damaging, because I idolized my dad, and for him to move forward and not take me was very hurtful. I felt very abandoned, and, you know, and then dealing with my mom daily with the things that she would do and say, and, you know, then the physical stuff got more intense at that time. And, you know, so I was getting abused from all angles, and it was very, very hard to go through my days. I would go to school and I would be lost half the time. And the teachers would always be like, oh, she's such a daydreamer. She's just not paying attention. She has other things on her mind. And I'm like, now when I think back to that, and I'm like, yeah, I had many things on my mind. I was like, am I going to live to see another day? Am I going to go home and get beat up? Like, what's going to happen to me next? You know, it was very scary. And I remember looking into the eyes of the teachers and looking into the eyes of adults. And I would like, I could feel myself inside being like, how come nobody sees me? How come nobody sees my pain? And, you know, people knew my mom was sick and family, you know, even at school, my mother would randomly show up at school and be like outrageously like her behavior. So people knew. It wasn't like people didn't, you know, like they knew, but nobody ever said anything. No one ever stepped forward. Even the doctors knew, my pediatrician. I mean, you know, everyone knew, but nobody ever stepped up and nobody ever stepped in. I could tell you the only time somebody tried to step in was my mom would have in-home therapy. So this is another dysfunction in itself inside of all the other dysfunction. So in-home therapy, they would do group therapy in our living room. So about six or eight people would come in with the nurse and they would all sit around and do therapy. Now they're all, you know, sick like my mom and you know, now I'm sitting there. I'm in the middle of this, sitting there listening in on all of this chaos. And then the nurse is passing out pills to everybody. But the nurse said to my dad one day, she says, I know your daughter has trauma. And I remember her saying this to him because it was like a glimmer of hope for me. I was like, oh, maybe someone's actually seeing me and they're going to save me, you know? And she said, I know your daughter has trauma. She needs help. I would like to help your daughter. And my dad said to her, you're here to help my wife. My daughter is off limits. Don't ever mention it again or you'll never come back into this home. And she never mentioned it again. And then when the therapy stopped and my mom went to the office for therapy, that was just like another dead end I felt in regards to being seen or heard in any sense. Or just like I said, the way I would stare at people and I had these big, big eyes and I would stare so intense at people, but nobody was asking the questions. And I just endured. I just felt like, okay, I'm just going to endure. And, you know, kids are resilient because I would take my dog, I would go out into the woods and I would take my sketch pad and I would draw and I would write poetry and I would do all these things, you know, and those are like self-care, you know, it's like, I would remove myself from the situation for a little bit. And I would like, it's like giving my brain a mental break. I was like, you know, like kids do these things that they don't realize in the time that's what they're doing. But that is what I was doing. I was taking myself out of that situation whenever possible, just to give myself a break. Because
but wasn't that still causing inner wounds inside, even though it was maintaining your somewhat normalcy of keeping you mentally sound, of taking the dog and going to the woods, journaling or whatever, drawing. But still, the poison is still eating away, right?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. The damage was running really, really deep. So
we're adding to the pain as this story goes on. Every page you turn, there's another layer of pain. And you haven't even got to major pain. This is major pain, but
yes,
the horrificness is still coming.
Yes. And the horrificness is, so, you know, dealing with this was hard enough and I was damaged and I was definitely trying to help myself. I, you know, like I said, looking back now and knowing what I was doing, that's what I was doing. I was trying to keep myself together. And I remember always thinking, it's going to get better. It's going to get better. And I would talk to my brother all the time. And I felt like he was answering me in some way or sense and just giving me courage to move on forward. And I would always talk to him and I'm like, please, you know, help me, you know, I need help. And, you know, and I kept pushing forward. And then, you know, as I was hitting points where I felt like I was at my breaking point, but the real breaking point was when the second abuser came in, the sexual abuser. So long story short with him was he.
This is Jerry, right?
This is Jerry. Yes. And Jerry. And Jerry, he was my brother's friend way back. He lived in our neighborhood and he pulled a knife out on my brother and they were young kids. And my dad kicked him out of our yard, kicked him out of the neighborhood. He was like next street over kind of thing. And then he ended up moving away. He moved away to New York. And I, you know, never thought of him again after that until one day he showed up on our doorstep. So my mom, of course, wholeheartedly let him in. My mom was connected to any young boy that everyone reminded her of my brother, trying to fill that void, you know, of, you know, a child, a young boy. So this young man was like 15 years old. He came into the home and he's telling my mother he's sick like my brother. He had leukemia. He needed help. So my mother, hook, line, and sinker, was all over it, because my mother, of course, you know, she gravitated to anybody who had anything connected to my mom, like with her illness and those things, my mother geared right towards. So she felt connected to this young man immediately.
Right.
And, you know, he came in and he decided, which is mind blowing, that I was going to be his girlfriend and he was in charge. And I am like, no, I'm not going to be your girlfriend. I'm 13. I do not want a boyfriend, and I do not want you to be my boyfriend. I hate you. I told him that. And he said, well, either, you know, you'll be my girlfriend or you'll die. That's basically how he said it to me, straight up. Just, you, then you'll just die, because I'll just kill you. So you're going to listen to me. So he beat me down. I was already damaged. I mean, the damage was already there. Like, I was ripe for the picking, and he knew, he was so calculating. He knew exactly where to go and who to find, because I was the kid to find, because I was that damaged and that lost. And he beat me down emotionally. And he would say things to me like, nobody cares about you. You're lucky I even talk to you. You're lucky you have me. And he would just tell me what an awful piece of garbage I was. And, you know, he'd say to me, you're nothing but a piece of shit. I'll say it out loud. I'm sorry. But like, these are the things he would say, and far worse. But, you know, and then it got physical. So then, of course, he was physically abusing me, because he was beating me down. He was making sure that I knew he was in charge. He was in control. And of course, my mom and her mania is like, oh, you need a boyfriend. He's your boyfriend. You have to have this boyfriend. I'm like, I don't want a boyfriend. She's like, I don't care. You're going to have a boyfriend. So I was in a no win-win. And I was like, I was just stuck. This damaged kid stuck in this mess. And again, people around saw, and nobody said a word. Neighbors saw, you know, people saw, but no one ever stepped in. So when Jerry knew the time for him was right, he raped me. He raped me in my own home with my mother in the next room, and she was oblivious. And it was horrific, and it was devastating. And I was just so, I just felt like at that moment I wanted to die. I wanted to die. I was done. I was like, I cannot believe it's come to this point in my life as a 13-year-old that I've been through this, and now this is happening to me. And Jerry was very torturistic in his abuse. It wasn't just about the sex for him. It really was about the torture, the domination. I'm in control of you.
The control issue there.
The control and that dominance. And he even went to the next step of being like with satanic stuff. He would recite satanic things, and he just was scary in his own right. I mean, one time he took me into the woods and he had a noose hanging from the tree, and he told me it was for me. And if I didn't comply, he was going to hang me right then and there in this tree. And from that moment, he beat me, hit me in the head with a rock, and raped me in the middle of the woods. And that, but these things happened repeatedly. It wasn't even, you know, like, you can't say rape was just once, it's, you know, rape is rape. But to have it repeated and abusive and disgusting and hideous the way it was, it went on for such a long period of time.
How long did it go on year-wise? Was year it 1 year, a year and a half?
Almost 2 years by the time I fully got away from him. But a year and a half, and it was brutal. And at one point I did want to die, and I had a plan, and I really was going to do it. And I went up to the lake near my home, and I stood up on this waterfall, and I was going to jump into those rocks and just end it, because I just couldn't take it another moment. And I stood there, and just as I was getting ready to step off that ledge, I heard something. I heard a voice, and this voice said to me, no, wait, stop. Just like that. No, wait, stop. And it took me by surprise, and I kind of like, it shocked, you know, it shook me into like back into reality in a sense. And I was like, I just didn't know what to do. And I stepped back, and I felt, I have to be honest, I felt my brother, and I felt it was my brother telling me, don't do this, that, you know, it's going to be okay. And I truly did feel him in that moment. And I didn't jump, and thank God I didn't jump, because I wouldn't be here now doing what I'm doing and sharing what I'm sharing. And, you know, things happen for reasons. I always believe in spirit. I do. I believe in faith. I'm a very faithful person, and a lot of hope. Even in my darkest times, I still always had that little glimmer of hope that I was going to make it. And like I said, hearing, you know, that moment, it was my brother's voice. There's no doubt about it. And I didn't jump. And the craziest thing out of all of that is that all of a sudden, here comes my mother standing at the bottom of the falls, screaming at me to get down. Don't you dare jump, get down. My mom was oblivious to everything that went on. How did she know right in that moment what I was about to do? She didn't. She was oblivious, really, like almost all the time. And in that moment of clarity, here she's standing at the bottom of the falls, looking like out of control, tube top, big red lipstick, heels. And I'm going, oh, you know, and I'm standing there going, okay, I got to get down. I don't even know what to say at this point now, because it just got even more crazier for me. But I did get down and I was very confused, because I'm like, who is that voice? And I'm like, I know it's my brother. He's telling me something. I get down and my mom's screaming at me and she's hitting me and she drags me all the way home, you know, and she was so angry. And then we got to the steps of my house, and all of a sudden, it's like a switch flipped, and she just went silent. Her face like dropped, her eyes were black again, and she was gone. We walked into that house, and she never said another word to me about what happened. And I went in my room, and I cried my eyes out.
Is that the only time, Lisa, that you remember that divine type of intervention from what you felt was your brother's voice, and something out of normal with your mother of going, hey, wait, you think that was a turning point, a crossroads for you? When you say there's a higher power, there's somebody else controlling this universe besides me type thing.
That was a turning point in one regards, because that kind of came in steps too, but that was the first right there. Because after that day, I would have those moments where I felt like I just want to die, but I didn't want to go that step. And my mindset started to change a little bit. It's like, I got to get out of this. I mm-hmm. have to get out of this mess. I need to find a way. And that ball in my mind started rolling after that day. And it took a long time, but it was there. It was like the seed was planted.
That was the growth. Yeah.
Where do I go from there? So I took many beatings. I could tell you that. The story went on, and I was abused by my mother. Then I was abused by Jerry. And, you know, one day I went through one of the most horrific forms of abuse by Jerry that left me feeling like, I'm not giving up. I'm fighting now. I'm done. I'm done being treated like garbage. I'm done feeling like garbage on the bottom of someone's shoe. Because I would describe myself that way all the time, just being dragged around like a piece of garbage. That beating, for some reason, changed me. That was the next step. So there you, the first one, the next step. It was like, again, an inner voice saying to me, come on, you have to fight. You need to fight. And that's what I decided to do. And then I started to get a little more callous and thinking and being like, okay, the tables are going to turn. I mean, I took my beatings, but my mouth opened a little bit and I started saying things, and I'm, you know, and I was just, I'm going to make it better for myself. And I, you know, I remember standing and looking in the mirror and going, where'd you go? Where are you? Looking at myself, and I was just pale and thin, and I never ate. I was like 80 pounds. I was this little skinny thing and sick. And I'm looking at myself and I'm touching myself and I'm like, where are you, Lisa? Where are you? And I remember, and I started writing on paper, and I'm like, I deserve better and I'm worth it. And I started saying that to myself in the mirror. And that was another step. I started to become my own cheerleader, like willing myself to make something happen, willing myself to get out of this mess. And I would do that. I would write in my notebook over and over again, I'm worth it. I deserve better. And I would say the words out loud to myself, and I would read it back to myself. And I would do this every single day.
And you hadn't done it up to that point.
No. But that last beating was like, I knew that I just had, I was not going to live the rest of my life this way. And things had to change. And the next step that happened that actually got us out of the house, which is awful to say, but my mom tried to commit suicide. So one day she just didn't come home. So I called my family. We didn't even have a phone. We had no money. Our phone was taken away. Our heat was turned off half the time. You know, we had very little food. Again, we had a whole family around us. Nobody was stepping in. So it was very hard to maneuver these things. My mother would work jobs, which I don't even know how my mom worked in her mania, but she worked jobs to make some money. It was very, very hard. So I went to the neighbor's house that day and I said, my mom went to work. She never came home. Could I call my grandmother? And I called my grandmother, I called my dad, and then my aunt came to pick me up and got me out of that house. And the only time I stepped back into that house again after that day was to get my things. Never went back again. Went to my grandmother's to live. They found my mother. The next day she's home and she's all cut up. And now we're living at my grandparents' home, which has had its own other set of problems. You know, it was hard. My grandmother was blind and my grandfather was an alcoholic and my uncle lived there at the time and he was dealing with drug issues. And now here's me and my mother sharing a room. She's manic, not on her medication, like out of control. You know, it was just very difficult. You know, my grandparents were good people. They tried really, really hard. My grandmother was the most amazing woman. This woman was blind, but you'd never know it. And she just did everything and she was tenacious and she taught me a lot. But being there at that time as a young girl, so damaged, I was angry at everybody. So I was a very mean teenager, to put it to say, you know.
Yeah. You know, I tell you, I'm just letting the guys know the radio station, we're bypassing the commercial break. We're going right on through because we don't need a break. We're just going to keep on going. Because we only have about 8 minutes left. But I think from when I read the book, one of the paragraphs, and I always try to do this when I read a story like this, to find out, okay, wait, it's all true, but there's truth. And when I saw this in chapter 11, and I want to just kind of read these quotes to you, and I want to get, this is after you and Jerry, you already got Jerry out of your life. Mm-hmm. Jerry, I guess, is running around with somebody else. Mm-hmm. They're making fun of you and all the abuse and the verbal and things of that. You said something your senior year in chapter 11. I want to read to you, and I just want to get your feeling on this. I left it all there that day. If I went back to it, it would have consumed me. I would have fallen apart. And I refused to fall apart and be like my mother was. So I created my own world. And that's how I survived. When I read that, I circled it, highlighted in Kindle, and said, that's the key to, I think, your story. That even though it was about Jerry, but I think it was, from the way I read that paragraph, it was about everything in life. I'm back in charge. Tell me what those sentences mean to you now, because I know it just didn't get thrown on the page because it meant nothing. Well, what's your feeling and emotions with that paragraph?
Yeah, that makes me emotional when you read it. Because it was me reclaiming myself. It was me saying, I'm done. I'm done being abused by everybody. I'm taking back the control. I am going to make my life happen the way I want it to happen. And I am going to fight tooth and nail to get there. That was my statement of being like, I'm going to do it. I don't care what's happened in the past, but this is who I am and what I'm going to do. And I'm going to fight with every ounce of my being to make my life better. And
I, you know, it's almost like the Helen Reddy I Am Woman song, you know, of the 70s. You remember that song? We both grew up in that I Am Woman.
That's my favorite song. You know.
But to me, it was just like that. And I always like to turn the corner because your story could go. And get the book, read it, folks. It is raw. There's a lot. Every page is full of emotion and trauma and anxiety and stress. And it's not an easy read. It's not a pleasant read, but none of these books are. But you see the aftermath of how you can get through it. So if people are in the situation that you are in, you were in right now, what's your advice to get them to the point to where they can write that very paragraph in their own words in their journal tonight? What would you say to them if they're listening right now? And if you are, lean in, because you're going to hear from the pro. What would it take to get them to make that decision?
What does it take to get there? It takes so much internal strength, so much on your mindset. You know, it's about changing your mindset and, you know, willing yourself to push forward, willing yourself to get to where you need to be and to get away from that abuse. You know, I, like I said, it was my own cheerleader. I was willing myself over and over again, daily, hourly, if I had to. You can do this, Lisa. You have to do this. And I, you know, and I think that's that internal gut that just says, I'm not giving up and I'm not giving in. I'm pushing forward. And that is really the key to pushing out of these situations. Because is it easy? So when you're a child to try to get out of this situation, it's nearly impossible unless you're verbal enough to say to people, you know, this is what's happening to me. I need out. Help me, help me. And most kids don't, because they're told to be silent. They're beaten into silence. They're emotionally beaten into silence. But as an adult, and if you look at adults who have been in abusive relationships, you'll see that many of those adults were abused kids. And, you know, whether it's a man or a woman in this abusive relationship, they stay because they want to fix. They stay because this is things that have happened to them in the past. And it's like they feel like they need to be there. That's when you have to look at it and say, I deserve better and I'm worth fighting for. And that is where you go from there. You start there and you push and you fight and you find any resource you possibly can to help you get away from that awful negativity and abuse.
You know, I always use a quote from Forrest Gump, and I'm probably not going to say the quote right at every one of my conferences that I do. And it's something about mama always said that you can't move forward in life until you deal with the past. And I think sometimes you can't stare at the past. You just have to deal with the past and go, I'm not focusing on that. I'm focusing on me, I need and how to get through to the next day.
And, you know, and that's the truth. If you think about that, when you're in the middle of a situation where it's abusive and dysfunctional, you can't think about healing. You can't think about, I'm going to keep studying this past. You have to think about, how am I going to survive? How am I going to get out of this, and how am I going to move forward? So that's such a thing with me personally, because that's what I did as a young teen. When I pushed forward, I stunk it. I buried it. I didn't talk about it. I didn't deal with it, but it was seeping out in little places here and there, but I fought through so I can get beyond where I was. And, you know, the good part about that is it drove me, it gave me the drive and the determination to push forward. But the thing that we all need to remember is that don't hold it silent forever. You have to find a safe time and a safe place when you're ready to share it and to let it go, because it will eat you alive. And it seeps out into all your relationships, work, family, everything, friendships, you know. But you do have to get out of the situation before you could really look at it and work towards healing. And it's a huge journey. It's a huge process. I mean, my motto has always been embrace the journey, because you have to embrace the journey, because this is what's going to get you to where you want to be. You have to take it step by step and look at each piece as you go.
Just in the last minute or two, you was wanting to talk about the relationship with you and your husband. I want to make sure we don't leave that hanging.
Okay.
How did that affect? How now has it progressed? And since the book and what you're doing now, just tell me a little bit about how that affected that type of relationship.
Yeah. So think about, you know, holding it in, as we talked about, to get us to where we need to be. And eventually everyone hits that point in their life where it's coming out. It's got to come out in some way, shape, or form.
Good, bad, or ugly. It's coming out.
Exactly. The good, bad, and the ugly is all coming out. So for me, it was being married 10 years, three kids in, starting to have the flashbacks and starting to have the nightmares coming back in. And I was living in two worlds at once, is that's how I call it, because I was taking care of my kids, trying to be the good mom, the good wife, you know, still dealing with my mom because I was my mom's advocate, always trying to help her. So I'm tipped in the past, I'm living in the present, and it's all coming to a head. So my husband obviously knew about my mother because he was involved with my mom. He knew my mom was abusive and what happened. He knew Jerry was there, but he never knew the extent of what Jerry did to me. So I hit that point and I went to therapy and I had to finally share my ugly truth. And I felt the dirty truth, and I couldn't even utter the words out loud because of the abuse was so hideous. So when I finally unloaded this onto my poor husband after 10 years of marriage, he didn't even know what to say. And he's like, I don't even know who you are. Who are you? Who is the woman I married? Who are you? And we did struggle for a long period of time. You know, he did some therapy. I, of course, stayed in therapy, worked through our stuff, but we hung in. We hung in tight. And I have to tell you, true love is really what held us together, because we're married. It's going to be 35 years in November. Been together 36 years. We definitely rode that roller coaster, and it was a difficult one because, you know, he was blown away. And then, of course, he had those feelings of like, I wish I could have protected you, and I can't believe someone hurt you in this way. And then, of course, he got angry with my family. Why didn't anyone ever step in? So it was all that, you know, together. But he loved me and I loved him. But we were definitely damaged by my past. And it definitely
was it like you were two different people? And you were in vehicles in two different worlds, and the gas pedal started getting pushed down faster and faster and faster. And you go, both of these worlds are going to crash, and crash right into you. And it's like, what do you do to be able to solve it? Yeah,
I felt that, and it
feel
did.
Like you're out of control.
It was out of control because once I started talking, it was all coming out, and it was, you know, I, again, you've read my book, you know, the abuse was horrendous. And it's like, you drop this on your husband after 10 years. And he's like, okay, like, now what do we do with that? And it was very hard for us to navigate for a long period of time. But we both knew the goal was we loved each other tremendously. We had three beautiful children. We wanted to keep it together. But boy, it was difficult for a long period of time. And, you know, once we came to a point where we got back on that same level again, we made it, you know, up to that next level. And our relationship grew from there, and it grew deeper and stronger, more positive. So yeah, we're each other's best friends. We are like, you know, we work really well together. We're raising two of our grandchildren. Our three children are grown, but we're a team, and we're definitely a team. And he was my biggest cheerleader when I wrote this book. He was my biggest cheerleader published it. And he's been by my side. Honestly, he's my rock. He's an amazing man. He's a good man. And, you know, I always said to his mom, thank you for raising him the way you did, because he was just, you know, he's just an incredible person. And, you know, it takes a special person to, you know, to absorb all that. And
I think what would be awesome is for you and him to come up with a seminar or a session, and maybe you do, where he can say, this is what it's like to endure it with a person that's been abused. And how do you know, that would be so awesome together.
It would be, but maybe one day. He's definitely camera shy. He's not. A couple of times, so during presentations, a couple of times when he was there, people asked him questions. And he was the deer in the headlights, like, but he answered them.
It's good.
So maybe one day he will step forward and, you know, share. But yeah, no, it was a really difficult time for us. And I was trying to heal in my own right and then try to heal a marriage. So
but wasn't that such a extra layer of healing ointment when your lifelong love was there with you.
I encourage
you to do this. I'm your cheerleader. I'm behind you.
Amazing.
Instead of, why didn't you? Because obviously you lied for years.
I did.
And it's hard to put it that way, but you kept it silent.
No, I did keep it silent. And that was the hardest thing for him to wrap his head around, is like how I held it so tight, how I couldn't share it. And the best way I could describe it to him was, is like, I was so damaged by what happened to me. I literally couldn't say the words out loud. I literally couldn't bring myself to say it out loud, because then I knew if I said it, I would hear it, and it validated that it was the truth. And I didn't want to look at it. But once I did look at it, I knew I had to deal with it. And I call it taming the beast, because it was a damn beast to tame. But of course.
But that's when the healing begins.
And that is when the healing begins. And like I said, healing is messy. Nothing pretty about healing.
Yeah.
it's a long, drawn out journey. But so worth it. So worth it. And, you know.
Well, if Lisa, somebody wants to get in touch with you, if they want to read your blog, if they want to reach out to you and just give you encouragement, or say, hey, how did you handle this, or get your book, all of that, what's the best way to people? I want them to hear from you. If people want to reach out and hear more about you, read more about you, and get into what you're into right now with your blog and everything, what's the best way?
Best way, I mean, you know, definitely my website, lisazarcone.net. You're going to see where I'm going, what I'm doing. I always post pictures. I love my blogs. I have to be honest with you. I love writing my blogs because they're just real and what's happening in the time. And they make sense. They make sense to me anyways. And I think people have really been receptive to them. So I think that's great. But people can find me all over social media, you know, LinkedIn and Facebook, Instagram, I'm Twitter, I'm everywhere. I would say Google Lisa Zarcone, you're going to find me. But if they want to write to me, you know, they could always even write at my email. It's lzarcone@comcast.net. I mean, they can, you know, write me there. But, you know, even like I said, my Facebook inspirational page. So that's a whole nother thing. I have two Facebook pages. I have my personal one, but I have my inspirational page, which I'm on every single day. And people write to me from all over the world. I have to tell
you.
Isn't
that awesome?
It's incredible. And they'll write me privately. But then every day I post inspirational stuff. I post encouragement stuff. I talk about mental health. I talk about child safety. I talk about all those things and share. So people can always write me there. So if they look under Facebook, it's Lisa Zarcone, and it says author's page. And that is, you can definitely write me there as well. I'm very approachable. I'll tell anyone who knows me will tell you that I try to answer every single person that writes to me, every single comment on my pages, whatever page that might be. I follow it daily. It's hard sometimes, but I'm, you know, life's busy, but I do. I follow it because I feel it's important, because I don't want to miss something. And if somebody was reaching, I don't want anyone to ever feel like I was ignoring them. You know, I just do the best I can to help as many people as I can. And
well, that's great. And I tell you what, do me a favor, folks. If you get on any of her blogs, Facebook, like them, smile on them, thumbs up or whatever the thing is. Forward them to other people, because that just gets more followers. Follow her, jump in there, comment, because it's so hard to get people to just jump in and say, hey, I believe in what you're doing and I'm behind you. And that would just help you out. You didn't ask me to do that, but I think it's just a great encouragement to be able to like them, follow them, and do whatever it is to get their numbers high as they can be, because it makes more impact.
It does. And there's always a hope that, you know, you're going to help someone along the way, and you might share it with, you might share it to your page. And then all of a sudden somebody else is like, whoa, I needed to hear that today. Or maybe I will reach out. Maybe this is so, you know, you just never know whose life you're touching.
Yeah.
And how you're touching it, and, you know, what you're doing to help. I could tell you something. One of the most profound things in my experiences with people, which I've had many wonderful, incredible experiences, but I was doing one of my presentations. And when it was over, this woman came up to me and she held my hands, and she was about 80 years old. And she said to me, I was abused. And she looked in my eyes and she said to me, this is the first time in my entire life that I've said those words out loud. her daughter was standing next to her, and her daughter started crying because she was just looking at her mom, like couldn't believe that the mom was telling me this, what happened to her. And she says, I've never told anybody. And this woman was 80 years old. And it broke my heart to think that this woman carried it with her in silence. But it's not uncommon.
No, it's not.
It's not uncommon. But it was such a profound moment for me because my story, my presentation gave this woman the courage to say it out loud. And even at 80, her healing journey began.
Just right started there. Because of yours.
Because and of
that's
my
what story. Makes it all worthwhile.
And that is what makes it worthwhile. Is my story uncommon? No, unfortunately, this is what's happened to so many people, so many kids and, you know, girls, boys, you know, there's no, I even wrote a blog about this, you know, abusers don't care about gender. That's girls, boys, every, you know, either way, the abuser looks for the right one. And then when they go for it, they go for it. Those predators are, you know, they're very shrewd and they know what to look for. My abuser knew exactly what to look for. So I can tell you this, that my abuser, and in my story, I write about when he's gone and he leaves with this other girl from school, he went on to marry her. And the same awful abuse that happened to me happened to her. And then on to his second wife, on to all of his children, abuse, sexual abuse, demonic, satanic ritual, saying the things that he did. And so his abuse carried on and on and on until he committed suicide.
Mm-hmm.
And the only reason I know this is because his family contacted me. They found me through my book. And I'm like, okay, so this is my married name, not my maiden name. How they found me, but they did. His daughter found me and his first wife found me, the actual girl in my book that I wrote about. And we had a conversation. And it broke my heart to think that he went on to do such damage to so many people. And I felt bad because I'm like, I didn't have the strength and the courage at that time to speak up, to put him in his place, to make, you know, make him accountable for what he did to me. And it's unfortunate because I couldn't do that because of my own damage, that he went on to damage other people. And it's that just shows you how it can be generational, because now where does that happen to the next generation of kids that are all growing up and they're grown? They're damaged now. And right. If they don't do the work, then it's going to carry on.
Got to break the cycle.
Got to break the cycle. And that's the only way you break the cycle is by breaking the silence.
Yeah. Fantastic. Lisa, thank you so much from the bottom of my heart. I know you're up way past your bedtime. Tell your husband thank you for sharing you with the world tonight through the program. And sorry we got a late start, but it was worth the wait. And it was worth the months of waiting to reschedule and get you on the program tonight.
So. I'm so grateful you have me on. And I really did want to do it, you know, back then. It's just, you know, like I said, crazy life.
I understand.
But timing, I feel timing. And I feel like for some reason right now was the time for me to
right.
be here and do this. And I'm honored that you have me on the show, and I'm really grateful. And I hope people get something good out of this. And
it looks like my phone is blowing up, which is indication that you're touching heartstrings. And
awesome.
That's normally how, and I will get back with you this week and let you know what kind of impact and emails and texts I got later on in the week. But thank you so much for being here tonight.
Oh, you're welcome. You know, before we go, I have to tell you one quick thing.
Yeah.
I'm a Yankees fan.
Oh, okay. Everything's falling apart.
I had to with you before I left. I'm a Yankees fan.
That's all right. Okay, so it's all right if Houston wins.
Yeah, so if Houston wins, I'll be going like this.
Okay, good. We'll do that.
All my Sox fans that are my friends are all going to be downing me now.
But yeah, you're going to get all the thumbs down now.
Exactly. But yes, but no, thank you so much. And
thank you, Lisa.
I look forward to speaking with you again and, you know, embrace the journey.
There you go. You too. And thank you. And God bless. And as always, in every program, each and every Sunday night, I always want to let you know, no matter what you've gone through, no matter what kind of life you had in the past, and Lisa's a perfect example of that. Her entire story is a perfect example of that. I always want to let you know, As long as you have breath, there's always hope. Always, always hope. Never forget that. Join us right here next week at 8 p.m. sharp Central Time, live from Houston, Texas, for another edition of Breaking the Silence. Have an awesome week. God bless. Thanks, Lisa.
God bless.
Good night.
Thank you for listening to Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams. To contact Dr. Williams, dial 832-396-6525 or email him at shatteredbythedarkness@gmail.com. And don't forget to join us each Sunday night at 8 p.m. Central Time, 6 p.m. Pacific on BBS Radio Station 1 for the next episode of Breaking the Silence.